You are listening to the IFH Podcast Network. For more amazing filmmaking and screenwriting podcasts, just go to ifhpodcastnetwork.com.
Welcome to the Bulletproof Screenwriting Podcast, episode number 238.
The scariest moment is always just before you start. Stephen King.
Broadcasting from a dark, windowless room in Hollywood, when we really should be working on that next draft. It's the Bulletproof Screenwriting Podcast, showing you the craft and business of screenwriting while teaching you how to make your screenplay bulletproof. And here's your host, Alex Ferrari.
Welcome, welcome to another episode of the Bulletproof Screenwriting Podcast. I am your humble host, Alex Ferrari.
Now, today's show is sponsored by Bulletproof Script Coverage. Now, unlike other script coverage services, Bulletproof Script Coverage actually focuses on the kind of project you are and the goals of the project you are. So we actually break it down by three categories: micro budget, indie film market, and studio film. There's no reason to get coverage from a reader that's used to reading tentpole movies when your movie's going to be done for $100,000. And we wanted to focus on that at Bulletproof Script Coverage. Our readers have worked with Marvel Studios, CAA, WME, NBC, HBO, Disney, Scott Free, Warner Brothers, The Blacklist, and many, many more. So if you need your screenplay or TV script covered by professional readers, head on over to covermyscreenplay.com.
Today's show is also sponsored by the Blue Cat Screenplay Competition. Now, Blue Cat is now open to submissions for the 2023 competition. The Blue Cat Screenplay Competition has been discovering and developing new storytellers for over 25 years and is helping new writers get a foothold in this insane film industry. When you submit to Blue Cat, you are guaranteed a thorough read of your script with written analysis of your submission at no extra fee. Blue Cat winners and finalists often make valuable connections in the industry, which helps them begin professional careers. In addition, the five cash prizes total $18,500 this year. Send your feature screenplay, TV pilot, or short film script when you're ready. The competition deadline is October 30th, with a late deadline of December 11th. All you need to do is head over to bluecatscreenplay.com and use the coupon code BCHUST23 and get $10 off for all listeners. Now, guys, today on the show, we have a very unique experience. I've had many, many legendary showrunners on the show, but today we're going to talk to writer, director, and actress Kay Singleton. And Kay is a first-time showrunner. I've never had a first-time showrunner on the show before, and we talk about all the trials and tribulations that she had to go through, not only showrunning the show, producing the show, writing the show exclusively by herself without a writer's room, and acting in that same show. And it is an eye-opening experience for all of you writers out there to hopefully one day want to showrun a show. So sit back, relax, and enjoy this raw conversation with Kay Singleton. I'd like to welcome to the show, Kay Singleton. How are you doing, Kay?
I'm good. How are you? Glad to be here.
Thank you so much for coming on the show. I'm fascinated with your story, and I've had many showrunners on the show, but I've never had a first-time showrunner on the show. So we're going to go into the weeds of, I'm sure it went smoothly, no problems whatsoever. Everything just worked on time. They just said, Kay, all you have is time and money.
Okay, yeah, that would have been a dream. Unfortunately, it was the other, so total 180.
So before we get started, what, why and how did you get into this insanity that is the film industry?
Oh my gosh, so I was on a whole nother path. I was in marketing for almost 10 years, and then you know, I booked some random role in a student film and caught the bug, and I was like, you know what, let me take this seriously. So I had my job transfer me to LA. I was working with Moet Hennessy at the time. And I started taking classes at Stella Adler, which is a two-year conservatory program for theater. And then I trained with Ivana Chubbuck. And I was like, okay, now I have this training. I'm going to go back to Atlanta. And it was easier for me to get on as an actress. But then it's just like thousands of auditions later, I'm worn out. You know, I want to have the roles that I see myself in or that I feel like I can play. And I also want to be able to create, right? I want to have a seat at this table where I can have some say in some of these stories that are coming out. So then I was like, well, let me take 2 years of writing classes. So then around, I want to say 2018, I took 2 years of writing classes and then got into some screenwriting contests, did 2 short films, and it sounds quick. It didn't feel like it, and it was a lot of hard work and money. And I got a meeting with All Black, and thankfully, and this was after many meetings. It wasn't the first. And they finally said, okay, I think, you know, you have something and we're willing to take a chance on you as far as the scripts. And I pitched 6 different projects. Wasn't just Covenant. And that was the one that I'm surprised that they went with, because it's so different being a faith-based anthology series. But
so,
yeah,
so let me ask you then. So you had, so when you decided to, so you went down the Ben Affleck, Matt Damon, Tyler Perry route, which is like, I can't find the parts that I want. I'm going to write my way in, right? Essentially.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So how many projects did you said you had 6 shows? Did you have 6 shows with Bibles and like, did you, the full pitches and the pitch deck and all of that ready when you walk
all
in?
Of
when
that
you
had that ready to go.
So that was done in like 6 months, right? All those 6 projects, you wrote those in about 6-12 months. Yeah, something like
that. Well, see, I didn't write the actually, Covenant was one. I had a somewhat of a pilot written for it, but it wasn't like in its final draft mode. And that was the one that was the least done. And the other ones I had, because I had been working on them a while, I was like, okay, these, I have the show Bible, I have the pitch decks, I have the one sheets. But this one I had, so once they said, okay, this is the one we're interested in, I had to go back and revamp the show Bible, make it more detailed, you know, make to show how it can go throughout the season and from season to season, and all these breakdowns, and eventually do a lookbook and all these things. So yeah, and redo the pilot. And because it was COVID, I actually had to write every episode of the season myself.
Right. So because you couldn't have a writer's room. You couldn't have a writer's room.
And thankfully I didn't, because we couldn't afford it. The budget is, you know, it's very much a new thing. They were taking a chance. So it wasn't a huge budget at all. So, you know, it was the hardest thing I ever did in my life.
Well, you know, what's interesting about your story is that you didn't come into this business fresh in as like a wide eyed. You had another career, and you probably came into this at a completely different perspective, where I've seen so many filmmakers, so many writers who come in early when they're in their early 20s or young, and they haven't done anything else yet. And they just are so wide-eyed and bushy-tailed about the whole thing that the business crushes them. Where you already had some life experience with you, you already had another career, and you said, no, you know what? If I'm going to be an actor, I'm going to go train. Not, I'm going to go audition and maybe I'll learn along the way. Right. And then you said, hey, I'm going to be a writer. I better go learn how to write. And you took class, 2 years of classes. So that's a really great lesson for everyone listening, is like, it takes time to build up the tools in the toolbox to do what you're trying to do, correct?
Absolutely. And because this is the thing about writing and structure, they can tell when, as soon as they get a script, any studio executive, producer, production company, whatever, they can tell if you actually have the training and your script structure, excuse me, is correct. And that was one of the things I think sold it, because I had done all the back work. And so it looked, you can see these scripts, they jump out on the page at you. And that's only from training. It's not anything, you know, that I did myself. I wasn't, you know, a great person once I started writing. No, that's from training and knowing how to do the format, knowing the beats, knowing how to do exact structure. And I still keep structure notes up on my wall all around my office, because, you know, we're always still a student and trying to get better and trying to, you know, improve ourselves. But it was the training. And I implore people to take the time out and invest in you.
Now, this is when I work with actors as a director, anytime I'm in the casting process, I always try to be as kind as possible, because it's brutal. More brutal for the actors coming in than it is for us, but it's also brutal for the director and the producers, because we have to just kind of go through this again and again. But while you were coming up as an actress, how did you deal with the no's and the rejections, because there's a very different rejection from a writer rejection than an actor rejection. Because a writer direction is like, I don't like your work. The actor direction is like, I don't like you for this. Like, right. It's personal. Like, and a lot of actors take it personally, but it really is like, you're too tall, you're too short, you don't have the right energy, you don't have the right look, and it has nothing to do with you and nothing you could do to get you to help you get that part. But with the writing, there are things you can do. You can rework the characters, you can rework things, but both have very distinct rejections. How did you keep going in this business?
We'll be right back after a word from our sponsor. And now back to the show.
You know what it is? And it's a ticking clock that I have going on in my mind, right? And I'm just going to be completely honest. I'm going to, you know, take down any curtains and just tell you the real. I am a woman of an age, you know, once you hit 30, it's like there's a timeline ticking that I have to meet certain goals, do certain things. And in our mind, we want to have a family, have kids, all these things. So I had a different source of motivation internally, but also as far as rejection too, it's like I had to learn to not put myself into these roles. Because at first I was getting my feelings hurt. I was like, I'm sick of this. I had stopped auditioning for a long time. I'm done with it. You know, I'm going to go back to marketing or whatever. And I gave up a few times, but it's also when you have this pull for this business and for this craft and for this artistry, you learn to do the audition and throw it away. Don't think about it. Don't go into it thinking, oh, it would be great if I had this role and how you look. Don't daydream about it. Do the audition. Forget about it. Delete it from the email thread so you never have to look at it again as far as the notice from your agent and all that, and keep it pushing because nothing is promised. And like you said, there's so many different factors because I've been on the other side as to why you don't get cast. That 9 times out of 10 had nothing to do with you, nothing to do with your performance, none of that. It's just, this is what was needed. Or maybe an offer was already out and you were auditioning anyway. That happens all the time. They have an offer out, but they also just want to see other people, you know, for good measure. And it's just, people don't know all of the backstory and what's going on, you know, behind the curtain.
Yeah. And not to mention, you know, sometimes like they bring in a young actor or a young actress. Oh, they just got cast in Black Panther or right. Just got cast in the Avengers movie. So we're bringing him. They're not the best for the part, but he's going to be huge. Right. We're going to bring him in. It's not, there's a lot of this kind of politicking going on behind the scenes that you just don't know as an actor. But now as a writer, how did you, because it's so different. How did you deal? Because I'm assuming when you went into that first meeting, that wasn't the first time. You probably did a few other of these meetings before. How did you deal with the rejection from those experiences?
It hit me. I had a meeting, and I'll tell you this quick story, with a big network for me. It was big to me at the time. And I was like, oh my gosh, I was excited about it. I was flying to New York. Literally the night before, I get an email from, you know, somebody's assistant that's saying that they're canceling the meeting that I had been working on for 3 months. And they're like, oh, you can just email whatever you were going to pitch. But, you know, we don't have time to do it tomorrow. I had booked a flight, paid for a hotel, the whole nine. And it was just devastating. Oh. And I remember laying on my couch for a day. I gave myself 24 hours just to be pissed, you know, and just sit there. I don't want to talk to anybody. I was so, it was hard to go through that process. But then you start to get a thicker skin and realize that that was not the place for you. Right. And now I'm more meticulous about who I even attempt to pitch to. Don't just throw your project out there. And this is for newer writers. Is your content right for the actual studio or network or whatnot that you're pitching it to? Do they fit its motif? Like, they have a particular look, feel for all of their shows, whether it's FX or AMC or Stars or HBO or Apple. You can tell the kind of tone that they want for all of their shows. And don't, so that way, if you know this, there's a very particular group that you're going to pitch it to, and then wait for the opportunity. Sometimes it's not good to just cold call. It's all the time. It's not good to cold call and just send random emails, but wait for a great opportunity and it might just, work out that way. I feel like I'm veering off. I always.
No. You're absolutely right, because I think so many times, writers and filmmakers and actors, they want it to happen tomorrow. We all want it to happen tomorrow. We all want to get that call. Like, all you have is time and money, which never comes.
Right.
Because you want that call. Like, you're a genius. We want to be in the K business. Did anyone ever say that to you?
I can't. Well, one person. And so that is, and I'm waiting for the next one, please.
Exactly. But we're all waiting for that. But that could take years, as it was in your experience. And most people don't have the fortitude to keep going, because there's a perseverance. And I don't know about you. I'd love to hear your thoughts on this. It's not always about talent, almost never about talent. It's never about skill, even sometimes. It's about who just stood in the game longer. Who's the most, the perseverance of just keeping going. Because I've worked with people, I'm like, how the hell did you get $5 million for this movie? Like, how? You're clueless. Like, how is this even a thing? How did you get on set when I know 20 other people behind you who could do your job better? Like, I don't understand that. But isn't that from your experience as well, is like the person who just stays in the game the longest doesn't have to be the most talented or the most skilled?
Absolutely. This is a who you know business. It really is. Who's your friends in the industry? Who's your uncle or your dad or whoever? And it goes in that path a lot of the times. And so that, like you were saying, you almost have to persevere and wait it out to get past those people that were in these places that didn't deserve to be, right? Because the very next day after the thing got canceled in New York, I called an executive in LA. It was like, hey, I'm in LA next week. Can I have a meeting? I would love to do this. I wasn't really going to be in LA. But because he said yes, I booked the flight and ran out to LA so I could pitch my show. But like, those are the kind of sacrifices you have to make that most people don't, because they get walked into the business without necessarily having to trudge through it, like most do.
Mm-hmm. Without question.
It's a numbers game. And I'm over it in many ways, but I'm still, motivated, because there's so many stories I want to tell.
I mean, look, I completely understand you, because as you get older, you just put up with less BS. Stuff you put up at 20, you're not putting up with at 40. Like, it's just not like, I'm like, no, I don't care how much money it is. My life's too short. Like, you start getting to that place in your life where you just start figuring out what's important to you. And it's hard for younger people to understand that, because I remember, I had any bone that was thrown my way, no matter how unflavorful it might have been, I took it. Because at the beginning, you kind of have to do that to build up all the tools that you're going to need to keep going in this business. But as those tools, as that toolbox gets heavier, you start going, I'm going to be picky, a little bit pickier, a little bit more choosy. But I can see it in the way you said, you're like, yeah, I am. I'm kind of a little over it at this point.
I mean, I had some PTSD,
but I get it.
After Covenant, for sure. Because being thrust into a position of that magnitude and, being there from, the idea and then the development process, which was, a lot of it was just me doing tons of research and then writing and then pre-production. And then you're out of time with pre-production. You only have a couple of weeks. Then there's principal photography and then, post-production. And then, who's going to teach me about rap? No one taught me rap. I was like, what is this concept? What is rap? Oh, I have to do all this paperwork. I have to do all these legal deliverables. It blew my mind. This is the last day of filming when I was like, figuring out what rap was. And then the post-production is a whole nother beast.
Oh, yeah.
And then that's another 3 months where it's like every day there's something that needs to be done. And I don't know about you, but I'm one of those people, I want to sit in the editing bay with the editor for 12 hours a day sometimes and make sure that every frame is right and that kind of thing. And then
listen, I made my bones in post-production. I was in post for 25 years before I retired. I shut down my post house, did everything, because I was like, I'm done. I'm a podcaster now.
But no, so then you know, post is a beast.
Oh, I've done everything from post supervising, VFX supervising, online editorial, color grading. I've done all of it myself. Mm-hmm. And so I understand that. I mean, I literally consult people on how to do post workflow, how to get it from the camera all the way to final deliverables. And they're like, what's a deliverable? I'm like, you need me more than you think you do. So oh, that's a whole thing. But before we get to post, I want to go back to the beginning of Covenant. So you get thrusted into a showrunner position. First time, this is kind of an unheard of scenario because I don't hear these stories often. It's one of the reasons why I wanted you on the show, because to become a showrunner, you need to have a track record as a writer and maybe a head writer and then maybe a co-producer, and you go through the steps. And then
we'll be right back after a word from our sponsor. And now back to the show.
Maybe, you know, 5, 6, 7 years down the line, they're like, okay, you know, they wrote something really good. They've got a good track record. Let's give them a shot to be maybe a co-executive producer. Like, there's a process because it's a massive amount of responsibility to try to run a show. Even a show with a low, you know, small, your show is not, you know, it's not Game of Thrones. So it's not a massive show, but it's still massive. It's like making 4 features. At one time. So what was it like being thrusted into that in the pre-production process, which was basically just you, which is a little not normal. It's just all you. But like when you walked on set for the first time as a showrunner and everyone's looking at you. Oh, by the way, you're also an actress in this, which is another thing that's mind-boggling to me. And a producer and a writer. Like, how in God's green earth did you sleep?
I didn't for 6 months. And I will tell you, I was so stressed out and probably went through a slight depression too. But I will say this, it was, and I have a huge amount of respect for showrunners, for producers, for head writers, for writers' rooms. And so I don't take this lightly. And quite honestly, I would have loved, you know, to have a huge producing team like, you know, like they have on HBO or wherever else. And that way I could have been more of the creative instead of having to deal with the business part of it. But having to do that and having to sit through, you know, pre-production and pick out locations and do all these things, it changed me fundamentally. Right. I don't want to say it broke something in me, but it also rebirthed something so that I could come out of this from a naive babe into like a fully grown adult, because we don't understand all these processes that go on behind the scenes. And I don't think people have a lot of respect for all those processes and all those positions, whether it be with crew or PAs or script supervisors or what have you. And it allowed me to gain an immense amount of respect for those as well. And I feel like I went off in this tangent, so I forgot what question I was supposed to be answering.
What was it like you walking on that first day on set?
So the first day on set, it literally was the scariest thing of my life, because yes, you do all this preparation. Yes, you've done as much as you can do, but when it's that first day, it's like, are we gonna sink or swim? And so I got there, we prayed.
I would be too.
I shed a tear and it went. And before you know it, you know, you're 12 hours in, you're 16 hours in, and then you go home and sleep for 4 hours and you're back there the next day and every day until the end. And it's changed me. And that first day on set will be something that I will forever remember for the rest of my life. It wasn't exciting as much as it was terrifying, but it was, we got through it.
It sounds like you went through, basically this was a film school for you. Like this was a trial by fire kind of scenario. Let me ask you though, did you have the pressure of the studio there? Like, did you have like that whole Godfather Francis Ford Coppola moment where like, we're going to replace you at any moment. If you can't make your days, we're shutting this down and we're bringing somebody else in to pick this up.
I wish I would have had that.
You know, you wish you would have had. They literally threw you to the wolves. Like, you just figure it out and let us know when you got to move the show.
Right, because that's what I want to tell newer creatives, your contracts are what's really important to look into, right? Because my, and I don't want to get too deep into it, but my particular setup was, you know, if we don't, it wasn't about the days, it wasn't about this, about that. You make these deliverables and you do it for this amount of money, or you're responsible for it. And you can do it.
Ouch. Oh man, you really put yourself out there. Jeez.
Exactly. And so that's why I made the comment of, you all wish that it would have been that case, because it would have, I think, alleviated some of the pressure, because there was another, you know, set of eyes and all of those things. But
right. And also, and almost also a ripcord that if you're like, man, this is too hard, I could pull the parachute. I'll go back to marketing. Like,
right. Exactly. But no, we're too deep in. Now it's like, you have to, there's no other way. You
burn the ships,
paddle, you gotta do something. Right.
You burn the ships mm-hmm. at the coast. You can't go back. You gotta, it's one way and that's it. Wow. I mean, geez, that's ballsy, man. I gotta give it to you, my dear. That is some big cojones to go out there. But I have to ask you again, like, that's insane. What's being proposed here, what you've done, is it's slight, we all have to be a little insane to be in this business, but in general, but what you did was really amazing in the sense that you put it all on the line. This could have bankrupted you. This could have
really destroyed. And I'll tell you more about that offline, but yes.
This could have destroyed whatever career you were building in this space, other than being an actress. So you really rolled the dice and you bet on yourself to make this happen. Is that correct?
Absolutely. And I promise you, it was nothing but the grace of God that pulled me through. It was, and I don't say it lightly, that it was the hardest endeavor. And when people say it's a miracle that any production gets finished and you see it on the big screen or TV or wherever it really is. There's so many pitfalls and hills and stumbling blocks that come, obstacles that come your way during the course of it, that it takes that kind of experience to get past it. And to this day, I don't know how we were able to survive, but we're here. But,
and you also had you directed other than the short films prior to that?
No.
Mm-mm. So it's not like you were dipping into a well of like 10 years of directing and 10 years of producing and 10, like, you know, and this is like the first time I'm doing it all for the real show. You're kind of learning on the go. I mean, it's because I know what you went through, because I've been there. I've had a show that I had to knock out in 4 days and I had to do 8 episodes. We shot. How many pages did we shoot? 96 pages in 4 days, I think it was. On a set with visual effects. I've been there. And I was also posting like a $10 million movie for Hulu at the same time. So I was like directing for 12 hours, go home, had to fix some deliverables, export, come back. Like, you could see me on set. I was just about to, like, and I was out of shape.
It up. Yeah.
I was out of shape. I was like, I'm leaning on the DP, like, dude, just frame the shot up, man. I can't. I don't know. Right. Where, like,
I'm it's like, I was, everything was skinny and flabby, and I was just like, ugh, I hate the way. But it's, you know, give me a Red Bull.
But it's but yeah, exactly. It's this kind of insanity. So I understand what you were going through. But when I did it, I had 15 years of directing experience behind me, and producing experience, and so many post experience, and so I understood. But you went in almost cold to that kind of scenario.
Well, you know what? It was like, either I do it now, I take the opportunity, or who knows? Because like I said, right before that, I got turned down for even the pitch meeting. Like, they canceled it and that was it. And I didn't hear anything about it. So it was either you do this now or you may not ever get an opportunity. And so I felt like I was between a rock and a hard place. I mean, did I realize I was probably in over my head? Yeah. but not really.
Not until you got right. into it.
Not until I really was there and I was like, oh, this could be a shit show, you know? And I really had, so like you said, it was like going to New York Film School in that one production. And with the directing, and I directed one episode out of the four, but it was almost I did that because I know how I want directors to speak to me as an actor and to relay things to me or relay their vision. And I feel like sometimes as actors, we don't get that. Mm-hmm. Because directors sometimes, not all the time, because I've had some amazing directors, but sometimes they, you know, focus on the lighting and the camera setups and the this and the that. And, you know, they let actors do whatever they want, which is cool. But we want to know what the director wants.
We'll be right back after a word from our sponsor. And now back to the show.
We want to know what their vision is. And we want to know that we're doing a good job or pleasing, you know, whoever the powers that be are. So because I had been through that side of it, I wanted to be able to communicate that with actors. And so I felt like I was a director's actor in that sense. Like I can talk to them in a way that they understand, that I don't, that sometimes that we don't always get. And so that was like the motivation to do that for me.
Now, I always ask this question because as directors, as producers, there's always a day on set that you feel the entire world's coming crashing down around you. I know that was every second of every day, but was there a moment that you in that production, did you just go, oh no, I don't think I'm going to make it? Like, and what was that moment and how did you overcome it?
To figure out the best way to tell this story.
publicly.
Right. We were on location for an episode, and it was actually the episode that I was in. And at the last minute, the owner of the location wanted to change the deal and say,
shocking,
you know, we want more money because we didn't think this production was going to be this big. Right. We'd already signed the location agreements. We had already signed the contracts. And I was like, but you can't just change the amount, right, at the last minute. And so we went ahead and kept shooting. And then the owner ended up showing up on set. And was saying, you know, we're going to shut it down if you don't pay another $5,000. It was like extortion. If you don't pay another $5,000. And I was just, I was livid, right? Because it was already so many things going on, so many things going wrong. Great. It was just a storm at that moment. And I remember telling one of the second AD, I think it was second AD. So, you know, let's get the cast and the crew very calmly. Let's get the cast and the crew downstairs. And so I can have a conversation. They had a big, huge finished ballroom basement. And so I can talk to, you know, the gentleman. And so he was looking scared. I was like, let's do this now. You know, let's put some fire behind it. So then once they were downstairs and I was alone with myself, a couple of producers, and the gentleman, I remember like laying into this guy, like, this is ridiculous. You are extorting me. This cannot go down. I remember we called the police and having them come and like, this, we have a location agreement that you are going to stand by. And I was, you know,
good pop, for you. Pop, pop.
And the police came and they ended up making the owner leave because of the location agreement. And I literally had to go from that, from, you know, being upset, going off to, you know, talking to the officers who were very nice and, you know, getting all of that squared away. Now I'm hot and sweaty and upset. And then I got to go film a scene because we were filming my episode. So I had to.
Of course.
Now they have to pat me down. I got to sit on the couch and do the rest of the show. And that's the thing. It's like. Wow. With that much responsibility, everything falls on you. You got to solve the problems. You got to save the day and you got to, you know, figure out the rest of the show.
Jeez, God bless, man. I look, the whole location thing, that always is fun. I always hear that. Oh, if that's happened, I'd be like, yeah. We dropped out. The location dropped out. We got to go shoot something on the day of. I've never had it. I've had the neighbor come out with the air blower, the leaf blower in the middle of the scene, and you got to have a little bit of that cashola money lying around to pay off people. And please, mm-hmm. please wash your car later. Please mow your, because they know, especially if you're in LA. Oh, forget it. Then they absolutely know.
Oh, we had to pay the neighbors too. That was another thing.
Oh no, you've got to pay. Everyone's got their hands out. Everyone's got their, if a good location manager knows, they have to have petty cash on set to deal with that stuff, because this is just experience. No one teaches you this stuff.
Right. Like,
this is,
because we didn't have it. We were like, oh, we got to go get that? Yeah.
You know, you that whole thing might have been like, look, man, can we give you another $500 and call it a day? And he would probably be like, all right. And that would have saved you a lot of time and headache. And because every minute that's going by is thousands of dollars in production time. So what's it worth? So these are things that you have to do. But I've never had to deal with that and then go act in a scene. Like, emotionally, how do you go?
Right. It was a crying scene with the, I think it was the prayer.
Oh, it was an emotional scene on top of it.
Yes. It was just like, do I even remember my lines at this point? Where's the script? You know?
So I always like to ask this question as well, especially when it's first time directors or, producers, things like that. When I started out as a young director, I'd walk on the set. I'd be the youngest person there. There'd be much more experienced people there. And I got pushback from crew members, from producers, and from actors. Did any of that happen on this project or any other project that you've worked on as a writer, producer, showrunner, director? And how did you deal with it on the day? Because, you know, I'm a Latino man. You know, but I can only imagine being a female first-time showrunner / actress, that there might be somebody on set that'd be like, how the hell did this girl get this gig? And I worked with Francis Ford Coppola back in 72, like that kind of vibe. So was there any situations like that? And if you did, how did you deal with it so people can learn how to deal with this kind of stuff?
Right. And I want to say this because they were an amazing crew, but I think sometimes you kind of lean towards what you're used to. And because it was my first time and I was a woman and I was younger, it was, if I said something, you know, in the beginning, they may not have taken whatever I said as, this is what we're doing. And they would refer to the DP or the director at the time to like, oh, you know, Kay said, blah, 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 blah. Should we do this? It was like this second guessing of it all. Mm-hmm. And I remember getting so frustrated about that in the beginning because it felt like it was disrespectful and that they weren't respecting the position that I was in. And I remember finally standing up for myself during the first week of filming after, you know, happened however many times. And I think I had to tell someone, like, listen, this is, however you feel about it, this is my show. And this is what we're doing. So if I say we're not going to do this location, it's going to be here or there, whatever it was about, that's what's going to happen, because nobody understands the vision of this story better than I do. Period. Hard stop. And to do that, you run that risk, because I am African American and there is this stereotype of being seen as this angry Black woman. But it was almost like I had to stand up for myself and stand up for the sacrifices that I made to get there.
Right.
Because it really was, when you think about it, it's still you on the line. It's still, you know, my reputation, my job, my money, my career, my this, my that. And so regardless of how you feel about it, this is how it's going to have to go. And, you know, I implore other women to stand up, or other minorities or younger people or new creatives, stand up for yourself, because there's a reason why you're in that position. And don't let anybody second guess you.
I can only imagine the frustration of that, especially, but I'm so glad that you actually stood up for yourself on that, because if not, that's a cancer that will destroy the production. They'll test you, they'll push to see how far they can push. And it's either consciously or subconsciously. And they're going to go, oh, she's a pushover, I can do whatever I want. And the whole thing becomes a fiasco.
Exactly. And then you got to try to reel it back in after it's already gone haywire. It's like, no, listen.
No, it's not going to work. Now, is there something you wish someone would have told you at the beginning of this process? Like, girl, this is what you need to watch out for. I know there's a list of things, but what was the one thing you wish someone would have told you?
Learn budgeting. Take the time.
Yep.
I don't care if you got to do a line producer class or do a movie magic budgeting seminar, whatever it is. Learn as much as you can about budgeting and line producing before you do your first project. And of course, hire a competent line producer, but you need to know it for yourself.
Mm-hmm.
You need to know how budgets work. You need to know what this cash flow is. You need to know, you know, what you're supposed to be seeing, what you're supposed to be checking off every week, what these deliverables from your producers and from your department heads are supposed to be. Like, learn the process.
We'll be right back after a word from our sponsor. And now back to the show.
Because it can hurt if you don't, and you'll figure out either sooner or later on the back end, but it's going to hurt. So learn that process before you go into it.
And it also had, because your money basically was on the line. If you didn't know that, it was going to fall into your bank account eventually. So you better learn the budget.
Absolutely. Exactly. And even if you have, you know, a deal where it doesn't, the studio is going to look at you if the budget goes off, and then absolutely, who knows if they'll give you that position again.
So, oh, it'll get around town real quick. Like, oh no, she goes over budget. She goes over time. She never finishes. Done. You're done.
Exactly. So learn the process before you go into it. I mean, and budget it out all the way to end, to post, and talk to your post people. Also, this is another gem. Have post-production involved in pre-production.
Preach.
Have them in those meetings, have them in the phone meetings, like bring them in early, because that would have saved me money too.
I tell everybody, I've had full episodes dedicated to people. I'm like, if you can afford the hire post supervisor, get them on in pre-pro. At minimum, hire a post supervisor and just pay them to consult a workflow for you. So you know how to, because I know, like, what did you shoot on, by the way? What camera was it? If you remember, do you remember? Was it Red or Alexa? Or
it was an Alexa. Ooh.
Okay, got it.
The name stood out.
So if you're shooting Alexa, it depends on what file format you're shooting in Alexa. If you're shooting RAW, if you're shooting 4K RAW, if you shoot, there's a lot of different things. So that determines how much pipeline you need to kind of push it. And like, who's your editing system? What editing system are you using? Can that editing system handle this? Are you doing this offline and online? And then are there any visual effects involved? If there is, even if it's like...
effects.
What?
Don't like, waste your money.
Effects.
We wasted so much money shooting things on green that didn't need to be shot on green. You know what I mean? And a post supervisor would have told us that in pre-production.
Mm-hmm. Or a VFX supervisor could have told you, no, you don't need to do that on green screen. And green screens, for people who don't know how to shoot green screens, is just more costly. Because if you don't know how to shoot green screen, then it's going to cost you a lot more money to fix it in post, because then you have to make roto. I had a green screen come in with four. This is what they did. I swear to God. And you might understand this. So hopefully you do. You know green, right? Green screen has to be one color.
Mm-hmm.
Four different greens taped together.
Really?
In the middle of a sword fight, so dark, light, this, that. And I'm like, what do you, can you fix this? I go, no.
No, just throw it away. Throw it away. It's a wrap.
You're not Peter Jackson. We're not going to roto every frame. You don't got that kind of money. Like,
no.
But that's those kind of little mistakes are so costly. And if you just hire somebody at the beginning to either guide you through it or literally take you through the entire process all the way through, man, it saves you so much time and money at the end.
100%. That was one of the gems that I learned. And my post-production supervisor, Tracy Kinzer, she saved my life. She came on after we were done, which was my fault. And that's why I say it's one of the biggest things that I learned. But without her, and because she's such a, you know, she's 20 years in the game, we wouldn't have survived, you know, because she actually made sacrifices to bring Covenant to life. And because you need someone to be able to take that train now that you're mm-hmm. done and completely finish the show. And she had the sound design, she had the colorist, you know, with the, what is it called? When they have to check the quality.
Oh, that would be QC.
Oh, yeah. Everybody, her eyes just bulged out. If you're listening, her eyes just bulged out of her head because QC makes everyone tweak a little bit. Anybody who understands what QC is, which is short for quality control, which if you send your show to a post house, which generally by the network will tell you, you got to send it there and it has to pass QC from there before it airs. They will find something.
Yeah.
Always. I've never, almost 25 years of this business doing that, never once that I get, it's fine, never once, because they have to justify their job. So they'll put in the stupidest stuff. You're like, what?
Oh my gosh. It was such a time consuming, and she managed QC, thankfully. Oh my gosh. It was one of those things where without her, I don't know if it would have, you know, gotten on air, because she was just a lifesaver. So yes, QC is a beast. And I know for each episode, it was like two or three passes back and forth with QC. Oh, it's a glimmer of white light in the corner.
And?
Who cares? It's taken away from the scene. It isn't. But it's like those kinds of things that we had to pass out with QC.
I'm gonna give you a little bit, and you might know this already, but this is a gem for you in the QC process. There's two magical words that get you out of 50 to 60% of those problems. It's called creative intent.
Okay.
All you have to say is creative intent, and unless it's something technically wrong, like that little shimmer, creative intent. I meant to do that. It's God was looking down. I did a little shimmer. That was the part of the scene. Creative intent. So unless there's like a cable in the shot, a boom in the shot, those things you can't say creative intent about. But generally speaking, creative intent gets you out of a lot. So everyone listening, if you ever have to go through the QC process as a direct, creative intent gets you about 50% of the stuff. The kids can't argue it. They can't.
I wrote it down. I was like, okay, remember those words.
That's just an OG post supervisor's trick. Creative intent. I was working with Lionsgate for a theatrical, and they would bust out stuff, and I'd be like, creative intent. Director said creative intent. And they're like, really? I'm like, yep, creative intent. All right. They can't.
Because QC can keep you from meeting your deadlines, and then that's another thing.
And I'm assuming you're paying for QC, or was the studio? Oh, no. Of course. So then it's just, and it's not cheap. And it just
never do.
Yeah, but you know what? Because before it was a person sitting there doing QC, but now they'll run it through a computer, an AI system, and the AI will just start poking things out. They'll spit out a report, and that's what they'll send you. And then somebody might eyeball it. Because before, because I'm that old, it was all somebody sitting down watching it, and that's their job to just catch any little issue. Mm-hmm. Where now it's so technical that even if a pixel is off, they'll kick it back to you because it ran through this system. So, right. And they'll charge you ridiculous amounts of money to do it.
Right. And then you have to get it. And just so people know, after that, there's all these other legal deliverables that you need.
Oh, the paper deliverables.
Insurance and music and
contracts.
Contracts and the title reports and all these things.
Cue sheets. Oh, no. And you didn't know about any of this walking into it?
Everything was brand new. The EI insurance, everything was a bill, I promise you. And I was just like, what is happening?
Like $5,000 for your no insurance. Like what? Yeah. It's,
and
this is not the creative fun stuff that they talk about at film school. This is the realities of the film business, even on a show like yours, which you essentially were doing an independent show with an output deal with
a
network.
That's exactly what it was.
Which there are a lot more of these kind of shows being made today because they need content at an affordable price to hit certain markets. So it's not all going to be Games of Thrones, Breaking Bad style shows.
Right.
It's going to be this kind of, it's essentially an indie, you did an indie show essentially with an output deal.
With an output deal. And the crazy thing about it is now that it's there, it's like now you have to start to think about what you want to do next. And I do realize that we've done this independently. It was great. I actually am doing another independent film. But as far as a series, you want the support of a studio or a network so that you can put out the best, you know, product possible. I'm personally, I do, and it could be different for every person. So yeah, I was thrust into it without knowing a ton of stuff. God, and don't get me started on workers' comp and
workers' comp and union rates and all right. sorts of. No. It's there's so many because everyone's got their hand out.
We'll be right back after a word from our sponsor. And now back to the show.
Everyone has got their hand out, from the payroll company to the workman's comp to. And then you get into post and you've got all of this stuff. And since if you don't understand what's going on, they could take you for a ride. Oh, my God.
The fringes of it all. It was
I had to pay 20%
for fringe. Oh, my gosh.
No. Do you know how many projects came to me, series and shows, that had been, they basically had been completely taken advantage of and stolen their budgets by somebody who didn't know what they were doing. They did the good talk and they couldn't get it past the finish line. Then they show up to me. They're like, we had 50,000, but we got 5 now. Can you finish it? I'm like, son of a bitch. Like, I can't help you, man. You got to go out and get some more money. I can't do this. That's a lot of work.
And that's what in some ways, and we'll talk about it offline, happened with me, but you have to push through it. Because now how some of these contracts work, if you don't, and I'm choosing my words carefully, they can put like a lien on your copyright.
Oh, absolutely. No, yeah, it's putting a show like this together. I'd imagine that the kind of deal that you had is like, look, we're giving you the opportunity. This is how much money you have. I exactly the same deal I did for my show that they gave me to produce. I wasn't the creative behind it, but I was the director and complete production of it all. Mm-hmm. And this is the dollars. This is what it needs to be at the end. Go to it. And that's what we did. And again, I had 20 years behind me at that point. And it was still probably one of the toughest productions I've ever had to do, shooting 96 pages in 4 days and never going over 10 hours. And never going over 10 hours.
Oh my gosh.
Because it costs too much.
You don't want to have to pay overtime. And then, you know, COVID was an additional bill.
Oh, that was a whole other. I can't even imagine having to deal with COVID as well.
I'm just like,
I'm exhausted. I'm exhausted, Kay. And I didn't even shoot this.
You have to have your COVID compliance officer, your COVID nurse, your COVID this, your COVID PA. It's just more money to spend and all the tests. You know, and all the PPE.
It's insane. So, all right. So the whole thing is done. You put it out there and then you, it looks like you're doing a new show called Gas. Is it called Gaslight?
I am. So Gaslight is my baby. I actually wrote that before Covenant. And that's what got me in the room because they had seen some clips of Gaslight. And I love the concept. It's also an anthology, but it's a darker Tales from the Crypt kind of meets a relationship, dark therapist kind of world where we talk about different things, not only gaslighting, but Stockholm Syndrome and the whole pick me phenomena. We take these social issues and we thrust them into a theatrical kind of showing with this dark, crazy therapist narrating the way. It's fun. It's dark. It's funny. It's scary.
And you're done with production on that one, right?
I'm done with the pilot.
Okay. So you're still in post on, is this an anthology series? So it's not, so you're in the midst of this right now.
I'm in the midst of that. And the crazy thing is because I also am doing a true crime psychological thriller, a feature film. At the same time, I'm kind of juggling both of those. So I'm trying to make sure that we can go into pre-production for the thriller in November so that we can shoot in December and get that done, hopefully before the year is out. But that's my first feature film, which is the psychological crime thriller, which is a new genre for me, but I'm excited about it.
I'm exhausted. I hustle, but Jesus.
Listen, I told you I'm on a ticking time clock. So y'all have time. Guys have time. Y'all don't have the pressure. Okay, I got to sit down and have a baby at some point. So let me get all these things done.
Get my shows done. So was it easier to get, I mean, obviously it was easier to get Gaslight off the ground, because that's another, you're a showrunner on that one, you're a creator on that one as well. When you walked into that one, how was it different?
With that, because we shot that before Covenant. So that was basically like doing a short film. It was like, you know, we're going to come in here. We're going to be on location 2 days. You know, everybody's my friend, the actors, the, you know, director.
Crew. Sure.
Like, so it was a much different experience. You know, we're just all having a good time. We're knocking it out. We're getting it done. It just ended up looking and amazing. And it's something that I can't wait for the world to see. But Covenant was just like, you know, it's 100 people. In the crew, we had 100 and some cast members. So it was a different
beast.
It was a lot on the line. Like Gaslight, the pilot budget was $20,000.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, got it.
So it was more of the indie route. But what I want to do with Gaslight, and we're in talks now, is to have a full 8-episode season. So I'm praying on that. I should hear about that next week. So...
good luck to you right there.
Coming to fruition pretty soon.
So what was your biggest takeaway from the whole Covenant experience?
You know, I'm all about preparation and making sure that you're prepared mentally, physically, psychologically, emotionally for whatever endeavor you take. But there's some endeavors that you can't prepare yourself for. But if you're ever in the middle of this storm, keep yourself grounded on the principles that you came into it with. Keep a level of integrity, because I think that gets lost sometimes in a storm. Keep a level of honesty and don't forget why you came into this. Because after Covenant, it almost made me want to give up on this industry, on the process, on TV, film, whatever. I was sick of it all, but remember what you came into it for. And so I think one of the biggest takeaways for me is learning that I can persevere through the storm, through the darkest of clouds. I can persevere through that. And there's a really beautiful little passage where they talk about a hummingbird that is perched on like a tree in the middle of a hurricane, but the bird is still able to sing. And, you know, because they know where their joy and their peace comes from, which is from within. So no matter what's going on around you. Anywho, so that is my biggest takeaway, to know that I can persevere through and maintain who I am. And that way I can keep going for the next thing.
I feel that that's beautiful, by the way. But I also feel that we, as creatives, especially when we're thrown into those scenarios, which I completely feel your pain because I've gone down that road a bit, not as extreme as you, though I had my own extreme versions of almost making a movie for the mafia when I was 26 and, you know, doing all of that for $20 million and met all the biggest movie stars in the world. And that's a whole, I wrote a book about that. So I've been down that road.
Yes,
I've been down that road as well. But I feel that when we go through these things in life as a creative, especially as creatives, we are being tested to see, we're also being tested not only by the business, but by life to see how far we can, do we got the metal to keep going? Is this really for you? And you know what? This business isn't for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure you, even on your journey, I'm sure you've seen people just fall away.
Yeah.
Follow it, because it's just so hard. And unless you are just pig-headed or persistent right. to the umpteenth degree, or it brings you so much joy inside that you have to do this regardless of the walls in front of you, then that's a different conversation. But it sounds to me that you, as you said at the beginning of the conversation, you walked in as a babe and walked out as an adult because
yes.
And I'm sure there's shrapnel all over you. You got
Yeah, I got the war wounds.
Yeah, you got war wounds. You got like the skin is tighter and tougher now. Like you could take on, you know, much more now because you're battle hardened and then some.
Absolutely. Yes. So I'm looking forward to it. I wasn't at first, but now I'm looking forward to that next step. I'm looking forward to season two, you know, which I'm still writing. I'm looking forward to this film. I'm looking forward to Gaslight. And now I can see the joy through the darkness. But, you know, you got to build up that skin if you want to survive in this business. Go into it, put on the medals.
And this is the thing that there's this insanity, and I call it the beautiful sickness because that's exactly what we have. It's a beautiful sickness. Nobody else goes into war, into hell, into a hurricane, all mixed into one, walk out at the other end. And at first you're like, I don't want to do that again. But like 2 days later, you're like, you know, it wasn't really that bad. I think I want to go do that again.
Right.
There's an insanity of being an artist and being a creative. And even at those extremes.
We'll be right back after a word from our sponsor. And now back to the show.
It's just from people, because my wife is outside the business and she looks in, she's like, you guys are crazy. Like you guys are really insane. Like it doesn't make any
sense. We put ourselves in it.
Right. And we do it again and again to ourselves, mm-hmm. again and again and again, where I had one person on the show years ago, a little while ago, and they said they bet the farm, essentially the whole house, everything on this independent film. And they had 7 kids. Mm-hmm. Like, it's one thing when you're young and you got nothing going on, but you got 7 kids, bet the whole thing, bombed, mm-hmm. just went bankrupt, moved back in with the parents, took them 7 years to get back out. But first thought that came into that guy's head when the movie didn't do well, will I ever get to direct another movie again?
Yes, because the insanity, because you love it. It's like a crazy, we're psychologically attached to this business. And, you know, you love it.
It's an insanity, dude.
Yeah.
It's an insanity. The normies, as I call them, they don't understand. They don't understand. People outside the business don't understand the insanity. Because we're carnival folk. We ran away with the circus.
Right. You don't know how much money that, you know, I've spent on investing in these projects. And it's just, you know, I keep telling my friend, you know, I don't mind going broke over and over and getting it back and going, because this is how much I love the art. And it pays off. I'm not saying that it's been all bad, but yeah, that's how much we're attached. We don't mind risking it all.
Mm-hmm, no question. Now I'm going to ask you a few questions to ask all of my guests. What advice would you give a screenwriter or filmmaker trying to break into the business today?
Go to class. Make sure that your scripts are tight. Make sure that your structure is tight. Make sure that you have done all the work leading into it that you have done so that those characters and that show can sing when it's put on camera. You know, and I think a lot of people, because you can come up with a story doesn't mean you can write a script. Mm-hmm. Story and script are two different things. And so I would say, A, make sure you have done all the preparation. And now that you've done the work, go out there and do it. Don't wait on someone to give you a yes. Because like I said, with Gaslight and Checklist and, you know, doing film festivals before Covenant, you don't wait on the yes from the industry. If you have a budget to do something smaller, go ahead and do it. Get your vision out there, because that's what's going to put you in front of people. Don't wait on somebody to validate you and say that, okay, yeah, you're talented. You can handle this. Because I was out pushing myself before anyone believed in me. Believe in yourself. Don't wait on the yes. Prepare and get it done.
What is the lesson that took you the longest to learn, whether in the film industry or in life?
Just because you have a certain set of principles doesn't mean everybody else does.
What? In Hollywood? Stop it.
It's like, stop thinking because, you know, you go by, oh, this is the right thing to do, that's going to be, you know, someone's go, they're going to gravitate to doing something honest or right. And I'm not saying that I feel like I'm putting a dark hat on things, but
no, you know, but just don't go into
things naive.
Listen, just because your default is a certain set of morals doesn't mean that the person next to you has that same set or even defaults to even close to where that is. This business is not, look, this whole show is about the honesty of the business, because that's one of the reasons I started this show, because there was nobody telling the truth. Everybody was just like, let's talk about this and let's talk about that. It's all fun. And, you know, I had this adventure and then I was on set with, you know, Scorsese. And I'm like, no, that's great. That's lovely. We love to hear those stories. But this conversation is as raw and true as it gets. And this, I hope, terrifies somebody.
And it should.
I hope it terrifies somebody to get into action if they truly want to go down this road. Or if somebody's already going down this road, to understand what is ahead for them. Because I always use the analogy, it's like you're in the ring with Mike Tyson in 86 and you're going to get punched. And most of us, when we walk into this business, don't even know we're in a ring, let alone in a fight.
Right. And all I'm saying is protect yourself.
Correct. I mean,
go into it with a level of protection so that you can maintain the vision of your project. And so that's the biggest thing that I've learned too.
And last question, three of your favorite films or shows of all time.
Oh, I have a top five in both. So we'll do film. What genre do I want to start with? Okay, so this is I'm a fantasy period piece girl. So one of my favorites from when I was a wee babe is Willow. Don't ask me why.
It's
something I'll always love that movie. It takes me back, and I think it was for its time, it was beautifully done. So I'll always gravitate to that. Mm-hmm. Drama. Now it's kind of changing, but back in the day, one of my favorites was absolutely Braveheart.
So good.
Well, at the end when he yells out the freedom, and the fact that he directed it and was in it the whole time too was really, really impressive. Also,
Apocalypto is such an underrated film that Mel did. Oh, and he didn't act in it, but damn, that thing was genius.
It was genius.
Brilliant.
So to jump into a whole nother genre, though, it's the comedy. Boomerang changed my life. I'm just going to say it.
Boomerang.
What is my all-time favorite comedy film. It made me see myself in a different light as a youngster. I'm like, oh, I can go live in New York and I can work for it. And in fact, that's why I got into marketing, because I saw Marcus Graham being the head of this, advertising firm. And it was so aspirational, but it was also a great story at the same time. And I can almost quote it throughout. He said 18 million times. So Boomerang is one of my absolute favorite.
Yeah, and there was that young actress that never went anywhere, Halle Berry, I think her name was.
Oh,
she never did much after
Halle
that.
Berry,
poor thing.
And Miss Robin Givens.
And Miss Robin Givens and Chris, a young Chris Rock.
Chris Rock, Martin Lawrence,
David
Allen
Eddie Murphy, of course.
Yes, it was a great Grace Jones, Eartha Kitt.
Oh my God, everybody was in that damn movie. Good PM Dawn song was in there.
Yes,
remember that?
I remember. Yes. Oh gosh. I love. John Witherspoon was in there too. I forgot to name him. But yeah, it was a changing kind of moment, coming of age movie for me. I love it.
Okay, listen, it has been an absolute pleasure talking to you. Thank you for being so raw and honest about your process. And where can people reach out or find out more about what you're doing? Do you have a website?
Absolutely. Please go to road106films.com. You can see the projects that I have and what's coming up and get more info about the movie, Agent Wright, Dark Justice, and Gaslight that is on the way. You can also find me on Instagram at kaye.s.
Kay, it has been a pleasure, my dear. Thank you again so much for coming on the show and for all your knowledge bombs that you dropped on everybody today. I appreciate you, my dear.
Oh, you're so welcome. I loved being here. Love. Oh, I got to say one more thing. Sorry. Make sure you tune in to BET because on October 11th, the Oval will be back in full effect. The Oval on BET from Mr. Tyler Perry. And also check out Covenant. On All Black is still streaming and doing great. If you haven't seen it, please get a subscription, check it out. It's a great show, and I love those actors are phenomenal.
Thank you, my dear. I appreciate you.
Yes, thank you.
I want to thank Kay so much for coming on the show and dropping her knowledge bombs and sharing her experience with the tribe today. Thank you so much, Kay. If you want to get links to anything we spoke about in this episode, including how to watch her show, The Covenant, as well as all the other things that she's doing, head over to bulletproofscreenwriting.tv/238. Thank you so much for listening, guys. And as always, keep on writing, no matter what. I'll talk to you soon.
Thanks for listening to the Bulletproof Screenwriting Podcast at bulletproofscreenwriting.tv.